Lost in the shuffle of the Ethics Committee report last week was a tweet by Gerald Butts, former principal secretary to the Prime Minister, who resigned during the SNC-Lavalin affair. Actually, we still don't know why. He collected an undisclosed severance, and now, 5 months later, he's returned to the Liberal campaign. Hence, he's tweeting. He retweeted what he called the largest collective statement from economists in history. Over 3,300, including 27 Nobel Prize winners, endorsing a revenue-neutral carbon tax, as opposed to increasing regulations to achieve emissions goals. Now, I've seen that statement retweeted, posted on Facebook, mentioned in the media many times, but it is incredibly important to understand what the economists endorsed, a revenue-neutral carbon tax. Let me read directly from the statement. When it comes to a carbon tax, in quotes, all the revenue should be returned directly to U.S. citizens, end of quote. I mean, that's unequivocal, but that's not what's happening in Canada. By the federal government's own words, a federally imposed carbon tax returns 90% of the revenue collected, leaving billions of dollars over the years in the hands of government. Now, it took them a while to get there, too. It took them a while to get the importance of rebating the money taken in. But at least they got partway there. And that's a heck of a lot better than what's happened in BC under the NDP Green government and formerly under Rachel Notley's NDP in Alberta, who both rejected the revenue-neutral carbon tax recommended by the 3,333 economists that Mr. Butts alludes to. The fact is, when BC introduced the first carbon tax 11 years ago, it was revenue neutral. By law, all money collected from individuals and businesses was offset by reductions in personal and business income tax. The new carbon tax was applauded internationally as a masterstroke in that it encouraged a reduction in emissions while mitigating the economic damage of the new tax. At the time, the opposition to the new revenue-neutral carbon tax was led by NDP energy critic and now the current Premier John Horgan, then party leader, and now the Finance Minister Carol James. They led the opposition to the carbon tax. So maybe it's not a surprise that upon taking office just 2 years ago, the BC NDP and Green government actually cancelled the offsetting tax reductions. The result is that the NDP Green government projects to take in an extra $1.5 billion in additional tax revenues from businesses and individuals' pockets this year alone, by the way, which negatively impacts economic growth. And the government's take, by the way, is already scheduled to increase each of the next 4 years. Under the NDP in Alberta, only 40% of the tax collected was rebated, with the government keeping the other 60%. Now, that helped fuel opposition to the tax, played a significant role in the election victory of the current United Conservative government, who have now eliminated the carbon tax on the majority of products and activities. Not all, but the majority. But you know, the opposition to a carbon tax that is not revenue neutral is well deserved. The tax was meant to provide an incentive for reducing carbon emissions, not raise money for government. But there's another point that's rarely mentioned in this climate debate, and certainly not by the likes of Gerald Butts, who's the former CEO of the World Wildlife Fund Canada. Nowhere in the Economist statements would you find someone supporting a carbon tax that they think should bring zero emissions. No economist I know endorses the idea of zero emissions. I'll give you an example. Child's critically ill, needs to be transported by air ambulance, which would leave a carbon footprint. In the name of zero emissions, should we let the child die? You know what? I suspect that some environmental activists would say yes. Actually, some would say the child never should have been born. But what about you? If you agree to use the air ambulance to save the child's life with its accompanying carbon emissions, then you arrived at that decision by doing a quick cost-benefit analysis, an exercise that way, way, way too many in the climate community refuse to do. Zero emissions is the mantra of the profoundly unsophisticated who let their religious-like zeal cloud common sense and judgment. They're the ones telling you that the end of the world is near. And let's be clear, there's no science to back up those kind of claims of Armageddon. The goal of a carbon tax, be clear on this, is to reflect the overall cost of emissions. But at some point, the costs outweigh the benefits. And the failure to do a cost-benefit analysis under the cover of reaching zero emissions has led to a massive amount of money being wasted. I'll give you an example. What do we get in terms of emission reductions when we gave a $10,000 to $14,000 subsidy for buying luxury electric vehicles like Teslas? Because it happened. Subsidizing high-priced electric vehicles has cost billions across North America. What do we get in terms of emission reductions? Virtually nothing. Even worse when it comes to the tens of billions in subsidies for corn-based ethanol. Now, I think most people now agree that that was a waste of money if you're looking for results in terms of emission reductions. I mean, come on, if the money had been spent on other programs the results would have been far more beneficial. But you know what? Spending that money efficiently, getting the best bang for the buck, is not, capital N-O-T, not the goal of climate alarmists. I'll give you one more example. If you ask a group of foremost climate scientists, or better still, what about Nobel Prize-winning climate economist William Nordhaus, to list the 10 most effective ways to reduce carbon emissions, and isn't that the goal? Not one would say blowing $47 billion in government revenue and losing thousands of man-hours of work over the next 20 years by stopping the Kinder Morgan pipeline expansion would be worth it, especially in exchange for what may be nothing in terms of emission reductions, because it's already proven the oil is going to get transported by rail or truck. But the need for cost-benefit analysis goes deeper. I wish I had a lot more time today. This is an important subject that gets overlooked. But I invite you to think about this. Let's say we accept the need to get emissions down, but to cut, say, 80% of emissions would cost $10 trillion globally. But getting from 80 to 100% of reductions would cost an additional $100 trillion. Would it make sense to spend that extra $100 trillion in order to reach that last 20% reduction to zero emissions? Well, I'll tell you, if you think that money couldn't be spent better elsewhere, be more beneficial to humanity being spent elsewhere, then we're in big trouble.